Venn diagram is one thing that you use in your work a lot, right?
Yeah.
Well, I was just kind of curious, like, who was Van de Graaff, and could you explain what exactly is a Van de Graaff generator?
Well, it's a what they call a static making machine.
Okay.
And one of the first people that made one was Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, really?
He used a rotating glass ball
with
horsehair.
Uh-huh.
He created static, and he could fill up capacitors with it. Uh-huh. So a Van de Graaff generator was in big improvement, and it was used in atom smashing as well.
Uh-huh.
And it took on a lot of different sizes and shapes and forms. It's still used a lot, of course, in atom smashing.
Hmm.
So the early versions were quite unique looking and impressive.
Okay. So then if someone had a little bit of maybe cursory technical skills, could they make one? Say, like, go to maybe, like, a Radio Shack or something and put one together? Would that be possible, or?
Oh, 100% possible. If you can get on the Internet and check out, actually go to YouTube videos and check out Van de Graaff Generator.
Oh.
There's a whole host of YouTube videos on constructing Van de Graaff Generators.
Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I should have done some research on that. Well, one of my little dog-eared notes I found one time. Now, this was supposedly from some research and development guy, Lockheed Martin. But he had, okay, this was his idea, supposedly. This is just something I found in my little archives. It said sort of a simplistic note on a weather control. You could take a small sheet of aluminum foil, elevate it a little bit above ground outside during the dew point time, and then electrostatically charge it with a Van de Graaff generator, and then you could start forming clouds. Does that make any sense there?
Oh, yeah. That sounds like my friend Boyd Bushman at Lockheed.
Oh, okay.
All right, Skunk Works.
Uh-huh. Ah, the Skunk Works. Yeah, there's lots of little talks about the Skunk Works. Supposedly, they have all types of fantastic things going on. Hmm. You think maybe...
Oh, yeah, they do.
So I guess maybe most of the stories are possibly true. Okay, well, how about the Tesla coil. Describe the Tesla coil. What exactly is going on with that, and then what does it do?
Well, the Tesla coil is a high-resonance open-air transformer.
Okay.
It's very simple in construction, with multi-turns of wire and a simple core.
Uh-huh.
And you have a primary energy of heavier windings on the outside, and what it does is you set up a resonance, and it boosts up the... I say 10,000 volts to 100,000 volts.
Okay.
And it goes into a high frequency.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually draw sparks with it from your fingers if you want to.
Oh, okay.
Being high frequency, it just goes around the surface of your body.
Hmm.
Without going through vital organs and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And then...
And they come in many sapient sizes as well.
Uh-huh. Now,
one of the biggest was probably Robert Gulkes in Leadsville.
Uh-huh.
Put on astounding 22 million volts.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That is quite a large number of volts. So now, I guess then, I mean, you're dealing with that much. I mean, harnessing it, is harnessing that a bit of a problem? I mean... Sounds a little dangerous there. I don't
know. It can be dangerous. You got to know what you're doing. You can actually harness this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Which was the goal of Tesla a long time ago, was to build a giant broadcast tower, and people could harness the energy from it.
Yes, the Wardenclyffe Tower. I think I saw something where that could have supplied... if not maybe everyone in the world, but quite a few people with electricity without wires, and then also power, say, airplanes and cars and anything with a motor, or...
That was the basic idea
uh-huh.
a long time ago,
yeah.
And I think NASA's replicated that one with their beam microwave energy to some craft, as I recall.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you're... Now, from what I understand of your work is that you, it's intersecting fields. Now, maybe in a simple way, I saw this. This was some years back. There were some Japanese kids sitting around, and they had two cell phones calling one another, and they had some popcorn in the middle of it, and it popped the popcorn. And it was where the phones were kind of, their signals were intersecting. And also, similarly, there were some Russian reporters did quite a scientific thing about cooking an egg, about two phones calling, cell phones calling one another, and they did this different numbers of minutes or whatever. And I think it got to about, once it was up to 50 minutes, the egg was completely cooked. But that was an interesting...
That's highly...
Yeah.
It's kind of like microwaving it.
Hmm. Yes. And, And there's different, I was at your site one time, you had different kind of maybe categories of things you did. Like, there was one, like, say, with the aluminum can, you, now, I guess that was, now, are all your different things you do basically the same as sort of far as intersecting fields, intersecting, now, is it radio waves that are intersecting?
Yeah, basically, yes.
So with the
go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, like, so with the aluminum can. Well, and then also, like, the one thing was amazing was the copper rod, that solid was like 2 inches or so. This copper rod that was bent around. Now, was it sort of the same effect, or is it different frequencies, or different power set? I'm really. In terms, say with compared with the can and the copper rod, I mean, is that sort of the same thing going on, or?
Okay, the copper bar, it did bend around, of course, and I think it's a videotaped. The can, I'm trying to remember what the can is all about.
Well, it just kind of withered. It just kind of, it's this picture of this can, like the Red Bull can, and it just kind of, it either burns. Or it just kind of withers away.
Was that on a news story or a Discovery Channel show?
I saw some pictures. It was just kind of this can that just it looked like it was burned.
Oh, I think I know which one that was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I remember. Yeah, it was a Red Bull can that
just
fell apart. Yeah, okay, that was 2006, I think.
Okay.
For a Japanese film crew.
Huh. So to set that up, basically, so you have, now this is radio waves that you're generating with maybe two different devices or something, and they intersect, or how do you set that up?
Oh, good heavens, it's maybe 50 different devices.
50? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Including phase shifters and... interferometers and all kinds of cool stuff.
Because I think one time I saw something where maybe it was a levitation event. It was kind of unexpected. And then it kind of took you a while to figure out how to do that on command or to harness it or kind of jumping around here a lot. But I was just trying to...
That's okay.
Well, okay, like, when did you first get interested in this? Like, did you... Were you, I guess, maybe you were interested in Tesla's work or... Or how did this first, when did you first start doing this type of research and work?
Well, basically, yeah, it is research, but it was, for me, it was just...
like a hobby?
Being a history buff and into engineering a lot.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of interested in developing Tesla's technology and old machines to engineering specs of the time, and these... strange effects would happen in the slab I built.
Mm-hmm.
And word leaked out, and then, of course, George Hathaway and Alex Pizzero and other people started coming down to film it.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to promote it to SAIC, Washington State University, and other folks, I think Colonel Shannon. Then they eventually brought it into the U.S. Pentagon and presented it to them.
Uh-huh.
And then Ronald Reagan at that time also, I believe, signed into public law the Star Wars initiative program.
Okay.
So Colonel John Alexander came down with a team from Los Alamos.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked together for about 4 months. And after that, it was semi-classified. And then, what else did I do after that? I put it on national news.
Uh-huh.
A good demonstration of it, 6 o'clock news. And then other news agencies came down to film it. And then, McDonnell Douglas got involved in Canadian government and orders of Deputy Prime Minister Eric Nielsen. Then Boeing Aerospace and blah, blah, blah. It went on up until 1989 when it went off to Germany.
Uh-huh. Now with...
And... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was just thinking, now this kind of sounds like there was something I heard that Tesla had sent a letter to Congress at one point and said that if you build me towers every 200 miles... I can put a box or something on top of them, and it will make basically a curtain or a wall that will just disintegrate any enemy aircraft or something coming in. Is that kind of along the lines, I guess, what they were trying to work on? Or?
Oh, for the... that I was working on?
Oh, I mean, maybe this, that would be similar, or...?
It's possible. I mean, the Star Wars initiative program involved a shield over the United States.
Uh-huh.
That incorporated a lot of different technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what they were trying to think of, well, here's one part of the technology they could use. So that's why they investigated my work.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because they felt the Russians were doing something similar.
Okay. Because it's interesting, the levitation thing that's going on, because like with the Coral Castle work, what was that gentleman's name? Liedskalin? Liedskalin?
Can't think of his name.
But
he
moved quite a bit of, I remember one story, supposedly there were some guys there in a truck and they were going to get something. He said, okay, now turn around. They heard a bump and here's this huge piece of something loaded on the truck, and they couldn't believe somehow he had. So I wonder how you got any opinions on how he produced his levitation effects. I mean,
really, I really don't know about that. You know,
uh-huh.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I guess
what
maybe,
he did there.
Uh huh. There may be, there may be different avenues to harness these different effects. Like you said, that one thing you said about 50 different things going on. There was one thing where you had dissimilar materials fusing, like a piece of wood in aluminum. How did that happen?
Oh, the aluminum metal would turn into like a mushy kind of metal.
Okay.
And if you have objects sitting on top of it.
Okay.
Or even underneath, it would just engulf them.
Hmm.
So one experiment had many mushy metal experiments, I guess you'd call it.
Uh-huh. But this is without this is without high heat, is that correct?
Yeah. It's without high heat, no heat involved.
So then again, you're generating these. I guess I'm just really kind of bumbling here. I'm trying to understand it. Like the radio waves. I don't know, but it's not just waves of one particular kind. It's also you had a static. You have static fields involved.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And high voltage.
High voltage. Wow. Yeah, so I think, like you said, I think you need to have some idea of what you're doing before you might want to try this at home.
Trying it at home, I don't discourage anybody from trying it. I mean, it involves a lot of machines and especially engineered pieces, but it got so bad where I was that complaints went in the city hall about this.
Oh. Yes, well, wasn't Tesla, like, making lightning or making earthquakes, and the police had to tell him to cool it or something, or...
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's written up in some of the Tesla stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He had an oscillator that started resonating a steel-structured building.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused vibrations in New York City.
Hmm.
Love to see the police records on that. That'd be kind of cool. Or even some newspaper.
Yeah.
Clippings.
Hmm. How about the, what did you do to get the aluminum to peel? You have a, I see a picture of, it's kind of weird how it, peeled.
Oh, this sort of,
yeah.
Energy's released from the center of it outward.
Ah, I see. So the energy, but it is that energy coming from the aluminum itself? Or is that...
You know, that could be, there's some scientific papers written up on it. One that may be interest to folks listening is, on Google, it's called EVOs and the Hutchison Effect. PDF file that was submitted to MIT University by Ken Childers.
Uh-huh.
It replicated some of this stuff.
Are you
Ken Childers as well. Hmm?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was just saying, are you saying EVO?
Yeah, EVOs.
Okay, and you said Ken, who's his
Ken
name?
Ken Childers.
Okay. Hmm.
He's replicated some of my stuff, and he's got a beautiful PDF file on Google.
Mm-hmm.
It shows all the diagrams and energy levels that are going on.
Okay.
And Ken Childers is a, I guess you'd say he's a reclusive scientist working on this still. I just visited him some months ago.
Okay.
And he had about 100 patents to his name. Considered the father of modern electronics.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Now, the one thing where you had the, I guess it was it a bowling ball or a big cannon ball? You had that levitating.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get that to levitate?
It just started floating, and luckily it didn't take off in a dramatic manner. It caused a lot of damage.
Go through the ceiling.
Same principles.
Have you ever made any holes in your ceiling?
Oh, many holes in the ceiling.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of structural damage, actually, in one of the buildings.
Hmm. One thing was interesting was the, I think I saw a video of this either on your site or somewhere. Was the you had a, was it an aluminum boat, like a toy aluminum boat, and it was, I think that was kind of a weird fire situation. Was that, what was going on with the,
That was a pretest for a TV series, 13 episodes, and that toy boat was
okay.
An attempt at the Philadelphia experiment.
Ah, yes.
That we were going to do in Hollywood with a model of a ship that was about 3 feet long.
Uh-huh.
And my partner in crime at the time were going to do a TV series together. It was Ron Melaloni of Ghost Hunters.
Oh.
And we did many radio shows and talked about our stuff that we're going to be doing, and we submitted 13 episodes to Fox producers.
Uh-huh.
A lot of stuff when a lot of stuff in Hollywood land simply dies or gets forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a waste of time, but the toy boat was one of the episodes that we're going to do.
Hmm.
I did some pretests and videotaped it and did a little bit of it on the internet. So that was about 2006.
Uh-huh. Also with that, you had some of the water, little globules of water started levitating. What was going on with that?
Yeah, levitating water, I've done a lot of that.
Okay.
And that toy boat was intermixed with levitating water, and John Ealer of OceanPictureProductions.com for History Channel was there filming it.
Uh-huh.
For a TV show called Earth Black Holes, but unfortunately, he never used any of that footage in that one-hour TV show for History Channel.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of a waste of good footage, good grief, you know?
Mm.
But, yeah, that was done a long time ago, as well as, levitating water droplets.
Mm-hmm. And then one picture... go ahead.
Most recent times, I was in the Gulf area, creating those effects again.
Yes, Andrew was saying something about that. So how... You can... So you did have some positive effects with the oil that was still down in there because of the dispersants and all of that mess? Or?
Oh, yeah. The test results are fantastic. This is other scientists taking measurements of the samples before and after.
So basically, what exactly did you do with the... And how big of an area did you affect in the Gulf? I mean...
Many cubic miles, apparently.
Really? So what type of apparatus, basically, did it take to do that?
Basically, RF systems, a lot of different RF systems, and a famous interferometer now, I guess, and other things.
Uh-huh.
I was very skeptical at first about doing this, but it did work.
Really?
And a lot of video evidence of it.
Wow.
Many, many hours of video. Nancy's actually going over it now.
Wow.
We totally cleaned the creek up down at the Forgotten Coast, East Point, Florida, Sportsman's Lodge.
Uh-huh.
Reversed the entire creek from a polluted mess full of garbage and sewage and oil and junk back to its normal state.
Wow. So this means that the... It's a kind of, I got a block here. It's like, the pollution that was there has now been transformed into something else, or what happened to the junk that was there, the pollution? What exactly?
I honestly think it went back to its basic state.
Ah, because it did come from the earth originally.
Everything comes from the earth, yeah.
Exactly. But we've taken it out and made it into something that, and then put it back, and it causes pollution. But, wow, do you think you could do something? How about there's this awful, supposedly this huge floating island of plastic somewhere off the coast of California. Well, it's a ways off in the Pacific, and it's this huge bunch of plastic. It's, of course, now, just bottles and stuff they throw off of ships. Do you think you could do something with that, maybe, or...
I couldn't tell you until I did it.
Yeah.
That's my nature. I don't like to say something without doing it first.
Yeah.
Maybe mentioning it did work.
Hmm.
It's like if I have a free energy device, I don't want to start talking about it until I put it on main media or something.
Yes.
Or have it reviewed by scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah. I'm not deluding myself.
So how would we, so this free energy technology, what would be basically the way to use it to get power for a house? Like, I've seen these different things. It's supposedly like a generator with no moving parts and somehow like the zero point energy. I've tried to get my mind around that. I'm not sure. Somehow there's the underlying... Is it plasma or something in the universe that somehow these things can harness and tap into, or how would we get...
It's quantum physics, basically. It's zero point energy. It's other names of the Casimir effect, quantum fluctuations, and there has been some scientists that actually tapped into it and made usable power out of it. One is Dr. Peter Koshenig, now deceased, unfortunately, in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
The latest has been Dr. Franklin E. Mead, zero-point energy collector, that he got a patent for in 1996, December 31. And that, I think all the patent applications for it have been bought up by IBM.
Uh-huh.
And I think one of the experts on zero-point energy probably is Dr. Hal Puthoff as well. And what that means, zero-point energy, is if you can capture a cubic foot of this stuff and convert it into raw power, you can power the Earth's energy needs for 100 years.
Uh-huh.
That's a quote from Dr. Hal Puthoff.
Hmm. Have you ever heard, I heard this story one time, and actually I did see some videos of it. It was Stanley Meyer and the car that ran off of water. And supposedly he had an electrolysis process that once it got going, it fed itself, and that his process would take the, it would separate the hydrogen and the oxygen, and then you would run the car, I guess, off of the hydrogen, and... But, you know, some people say, well, it takes a lot of energy for that electrolysis. But somehow, supposedly, his effect would, it was sort of fed itself. And I think he also said that with this, now it might be a little expensive to, but he said every motor vehicle on the road, you could retrofit maybe a special kind of spark plug or something. But once you did it, you would just be putting water into the gas tank and off you'd go. Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Heard a lot about those.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There was even a group in Canada that were working on it, too.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know how far they got with it. Myself, I never really worked with that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I'm trying to remember, did we, or did a quick experiment with water and frequencies?
Hmm.
And did get a bunch of hydrogen.
Okay.
Coming out of the water itself, but I had many other things to do, so I never pursued anything like that.
Yes.
Oh, there's been some really cool stuff with cars and things that one in 1984, Hollywood had a car that could go, I think, a couple hundred miles on a gallon of gas.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I have documents on that thing here.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, some years ago, don't interrupt your thought. His name was Byron Wine. I think the site is still up, byronwine.com. And he had all this information that we had in the 30s, the technology to get over 200 miles to the gallon. And basically what they were doing, it sounded pretty simple. Basically, they were aspirating the fuel first, either heating it or maybe putting it into a baffle and putting fumes down in the engine instead of putting the liquid gas. So you'd have this big American car getting, you know, over 200 miles to the gallon, and that was a very long time ago, but I don't know. And supposedly you can duplicate that to some extent.
This incorporated called Car Wars, a motion picture, which was big name actress and actress, but never made it because the oil company squashed it.
Mm-hmm.
But it had off-the-shelf components that you could get.
Hmm.
And military surplus devices. Uh-huh. Put it all together, and you got this incredible car.
Yeah, that was the story with Stanley Meyer's work and this other thing, because... I mean, if you'd get 230 miles to the gallon, I mean, it doesn't really matter. The gas could be, you know, $10 a gallon. You wouldn't hardly ever have to, you know, once a year maybe put some gas in it.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly, this whole thing was squashed down. They were ready to go. I have the full story on it here. So... You know, with the oil stuff going on now and all that, it's been quite a thing for that to take off, but...
Yes, it does...
Again, oil interest, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does seem that we could get away from petroleum, which is just... is so polluting. I mean, I did have a guest a few times on how alcohol, how could be running our vehicles off of alcohol...
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked his work, but just on a personal note, he kept seeming to be pushing the human activity caused climate change and also the peak oil business, which I myself don't quite subscribe to. For one, we have evidence that these changes are happening on every planet in the solar system. And then also, there's a lot of evidence that petroleum is abiotic in nature, but still, you know, petroleum is very polluting, so we really shouldn't be using it. But, maybe going back to your work here, I see this one picture. It's a solid aluminum bar, but it has an interesting little hole. It almost seems like to be a kind of worm hole. It's like it kind of goes down the bar, but inside it. What were you doing to cause that to happen?
Oh, basically the same kind of system running.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to calculate what would happen in the test area, but that happened as well.
Hmm. So then maybe a lot of sometimes when you're doing this, a part of it is uncontrolled, or you kind of get it in going in motion, and just some things happen that, I mean, do you get a lot of do you have a lot of surprises sometimes, or?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, big surprises, like neighbors' ornaments melting away.
Really, something on their wall just kind of. Have they ever made you pay for something, or, oh my?
No, they usually go to the news media or City Hall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I got some of their videos that I upload on my YouTube channel.
Hmm. Wow.
As well as CNN iReport.
Uh-huh.
Got pilot stuff on CNN iReport.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to use a tag to get in because I've been booted off there so many times.
Uh-huh.
I put up quite controversial stuff, so...
Mm-hmm.
CNN, you know, CNN is CNN, what can I say?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes the facts, they don't want the facts to get in the way of the story. How about maybe for a second again, anomalous melting, like how do you melt metal without heat? How does that come about?
Well, that came about a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
When these samples would turn into jelly, and it's a kind of a, I guess, an atomic association going on. And a transmutation effect.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know all the mechanics of it, but some scientists do.
Mm-hmm.
Such as Ken Childers.
Okay. So there's that, and then there's also the fracturing of the metals.
Mm.
Because it's sliding in a sideways way.
Sideways, or it breaks in half or in many pieces.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So those are two very, very different effects. One, it looks like it's, I mean, I guess it is melting, but melting you'd think of heat, but it's melting without heat. And then you have the fracturing, but fracturing, that almost sounds like, in a sense, extreme cold. Things might fracture, but I don't know. I don't know. I was like just sort of trying to grasp here.
Okay. Sometimes a fracture with a popping sound or just simply fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Because you're changing the crystalline structures and physical properties of the metal.
Yeah.
So the metal is how about alchemy? How about so if it would be possible, well, what was the alchemist saying? They wanted to change lead into gold. Do you think that's theoretically possible? How would you do that if that would be possible?
Well, the conventional way, of course, using a cyclotron.
Okay.
But it's very expensive to do that.
Is it changing the atomic weight?
Atomic weight, yes. I recently had a sample analyzed. It was aluminum with high concentrations of arsenic, but not gold.
Hmm.
So, I guess it'd be kind of interesting to change something into gold, but I haven't done that yet.
And then maybe sometimes, have you ever, you've had the, I guess the term would be non-self-quenching, the reaction keeps on going, like you sort of, you get it started, but it kind of keeps on going on its own?
Yeah, but appears to be so in some cases.
Uh-huh.
So, and there was a paper written up on that, too.
How?
And luckily it did stop.
Yeah. How would you, well, what do you think is going on there? How would you describe that? I mean,
well, when things are turned off, so sometimes the effects still continue for a short time after.
Uh-huh, yes.
Especially in the metal pieces. Now, to explain that, probably need a physicist that could really explain it well.
Yeah, I don't know. I still try to,
Well, there's been a lot of papers written on it. But again, I think it all happens on a subatomic, in a subatomic world. If you tap into zero-point energy and you get any amount of energy, you need to do whatever work you need to do. That's my gut feeling, and maybe that's Ken Scholder's gut feeling as well.
One thing that's interesting is trying to think about is plasma. Plasma is how would you describe plasma?
Well, it's like an electrical fire in a way.
But now it's not.
I
was going to say it's not necessarily hot though, or.
No, it can be very hot.
It can be very hot.
Depending on what areas you call plasma.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's different names for plasma. They even use the medical terminology for plasma, but I had some in the round ball form when I applied RF to it. Formed this really cool-looking plasma. And inside the ball, of course, is some noble gases. It's an unusual science unto itself. There's a scientist I know who created this in Russia somewhere. Or ball lightning. I've created that, too.
Really?
I guess you could call that plasma, yeah.
Really? Ball lightning. I think I saw a picture of that one time. It supposedly came down somebody's chimney and then bounced around the house and went somewhere. I don't know where.
Well, I used to generate it with huge amounts of capacitors.
Okay.
They're actually used in plasma research. Low inductance capacitors. Each capacitor is 500 joules of energy stored. 50,000 volts. You build this up, get voltage up in these capacitors and discharge it, and you get these massive explosions. In some cases, you get a plasma ball flying off of it. Just vaporize some metal and it turned into a plasma ball.
Wow. Joules. Let's see now. A joule. Are joules composed of volts or?
No, that's a measurement of energy.
A measurement of energy. Now, do you do much with magnets? I guess you do. A good bit of this is with magnetic fields.
Oh, yeah, with magnetics, I used to use it quite a bit in, like, waveguide systems for attenuation and manipulating electrostatic energy and that kind of thing. And form particular situations with an electrostatic field. had variable magnetic power supplies. So if I had an electromagnet, I could apply a voltage to it, vary the voltage and vary the intensity, direct current type.
Hmm.
So you could actually train and condition the electrostatic field.
So, yes, I don't know. It's just really something. So we are causing, I guess, the molecular structure to be altered. And, okay, say like the bending of the metal and ways that, like with the copper bar, when the effects are applied, the atomic structure is maybe altered in a way that... So does the bar bend on its own, or is there a force put on it to bend the bar?
No, simply it bends on its own.
It just bends on its own. Because if you... Yes, if you somehow had it into some kind of big vise or something and you bent it, it would either kink or it wouldn't have a smooth bend.
Yeah. That's why test samples that Colonel Alexander supplied were quite impressive. And he appeared on two television shows with me, Strange Science, Science Frontiers, TLC, and then Discovery Channel's Beyond Invention. He is a guest on that as well as myself. Talking about all that stuff.
Yeah, there is a lot of this on YouTube. Maybe I should have tried to look at more of that to... I'm trying to come up with some relatively intelligent questions, but it's weird science. Not necessarily that it's weird. It's just something that you don't quite understand yet. I don't know if it's really...
your listening audience should go to my channel. It's John K. Hutchison 1. YouTube channel.
Okay.
I've uploaded... some of the news stuff, some of the science stuff, some of the TV shows.
Okay. Yeah.
And also the water treatment at Indian Creek in East Point, Florida.
Yes, that's really heartening news. Are you going to do more of that? I mean, so if you've had some success already, you could clean it all up, couldn't you? I mean. Or,
pretty much, and you know, I think so. And we had a lot of support of scientists. Sent us helpful information. Some of them were in the Navy Department. As well, and so very, very helpful folks.
Really?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean. A lot of support there, and they come down in person occasionally. Had some celebrity friends of mine show up down there. Richard Heaney and his family. Lending support. And then Q Wonka showed up, lending support. She's an actress lady, friend of mine. She starred in Pocahontas.
Oh, really?
And she's kind of noted for chaining herself up to the... The gates of the White House.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. she might chain herself to a tree to keep him from cutting it down or something, or...
Oh, yeah, she's a very determined hobbit.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of support from those folks and folks in Hollywood land. Entertainment capital of the world, if you start getting them going into green and alternative energy and that, then the media might eventually change a little bit.
Yes.
For the good.
I mean, lots of different ideas about that. I mean, it seems like the media is owned by the powers that want to keep things as they are. It seems like
I think so. I mean, my friend Steven Seagal did a motion picture called Undeadly Ground, and after he did that film,
mm-hmm.
he couldn't get a job for a couple of years after that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Simply, the oil companies didn't like that kind of publicity.
Hmm.
And that was a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have more strength in numbers because more people are becoming aware of all this stuff.
Yes. I mean, this is a bit... This is... I mean, I don't need you to comment on this, but my own opinion that lately, the thing about the Osama hoopla, I mean, I just... It's just amazing. I mean, somebody... It's amazing you kill somebody who's been dead for a decade. And I just saw a reaction, and I tried to get into it, but it was sort of like at a gas station, and this one lady was looking at this front page of newspaper, and then the lady behind the counter, they were just looking at this, and I could tell they were just like, please give us a break, you know? I mean, I think people can...
Really?
I think you can only be lied
people
to...
People are waking up.
I think you can only be lied to so much, and it just at some point it's just like, come on, they just, you know, I mean,
yeah. I mean, look at the Osama bin Laden story. I mean, that goes on.
Well, I played.
He's always dead.
Yeah, he always seems to pop up either dead or killed or raptured at a convenient time. There was a Adrian Salbucci little commentary I played last week, and he went through the 9 lives. There was at least apparently documented 9 times that Osama had died at a convenient moment, but, you know, I don't know, whatever. Just...
I guess they improved the storyline.
Yes. So now...
I don't really know.
So now they're going to have to get really good to resurrect him this time, but, you know, who knows? Maybe they will.
It was just... Like, he's dead. He's dead, Jim.
Yeah, it was just so convenient. Well, see, we blew his head off and dumped him in the ocean, but you can believe us. I don't know. Well, anyway... Maybe the, I'm just sort of bouncing around here a lot, but, okay, like the glowing, how about the metal that looks like it's molten, it's glowing, but it's not hot?
That's cool.
What's causing the metal to glow to look like it's molten, but it's not actually molten? What's going on there?
That's kind of a rare event. It's only happened a few times, and I honestly don't know.
Okay.
And since it's lying on wood...
Mm-hmm.
If it was hot, it would burn right through the wood.
Yes.
As you know, if you have a welding rod or something and it gets stuck and it breaks off,
mm-hmm.
it'll make a lot of smoke and burn into wood.
Uh-huh.
But this is a heavy chunk of metal.
Yeah.
Started glowing and separates and stops glowing.
Hmm. That's a really... The weird fires, that is a really cool...
There's other events like that.
Uh-huh.
But it was during the U.S. government experiments.
Hmm.
I think they might have the video on it. I don't, unfortunately. I wish I had their videos and the Canadian government's videos.
Mm-hmm.
They make excellent YouTube videos, I think, by now.
Hmm.
But, yeah, that's a very interesting effect.
Hmm. So, like, are you working on anything here lately that's maybe that you haven't quite, are you have any research you haven't quite done before, or have any avenues of something you want to try, or what's?
Actually, right now, simply try and experiment with reducing background radiation levels,
mm-hmm.
which I'll be doing in a couple of days, or probably today.
Yeah, this awful business in Japan. So I would think some of this work could maybe alleviate some of the radiation, or all of it, or...
I sure hope so. I mean, I was a guest of Japan,
uh-huh.
and did lecture tours for a couple of years over there.
Okay.
Made a lot of friends, you know, and I was in Tokyo, and I was in all those places,
mm-hmm.
talking and visiting folks. and a guest of the Sukhya Makakari Temple.
Okay.
About 40,000 people. That's really cool.
Hmm.
But they're all very friendly folks and amazing times. So I hope that something can be done with that.
Wow. It's just amazing. I mean,
and that whole situation is pretty bad.
And it's not getting any better. I guess at some point there are people that are... I read something that there's quite a few people that are trying to work on that situation, and they're probably dead. I mean, they're alive now, but they've probably had so much radiation that they're not going to last too long.
Wasn't there a news article that Hillary Clinton wanted to dump boron on all that, on those reactors?
Mm. Wow.
That would have stopped the problems, I'm sure.
Hmm.
Boron absorbs all the nuclear stuff.
Uh-huh.
But nothing was ever heard again in the media about it.
Hmm. And I guess we have a lot of reactors around that are about that age. And and then also some, the combination of the fault lines. I mean, that's just amazing. I mean here...
Well, it's pretty bad.
But with this technology, that it seems to be, there's something valid to it. This free energy could, you know, not only we get away from petroleum, but nuclear. I mean, what a bunch of business to boil water. Nuclear reaction.
I know.
Wow.
It's pretty sad. Pretty sad, isn't it? It's pretty sad. And there is a way to eliminate all this nuclear poison.
Uh-huh.
And that was Ken Scholer's idea.
Okay.
We were guests of Star Trek people in 1997 already, a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
The lecture in L.A. on the elimination of nuclear radioactive stuff because of the leftover atomic bombs in Russia.
Yes.
And Ken Scholders and Dr. Elizabeth Ann Rauscher had ideas on how to use EVOs to destroy it.
Oh.
Nuclear waste.
Uh-huh.
And I followed them around, and they were going to congressmen and other folks like that, and the congresspeople would write down all this information, but nothing was ever done about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for about a month at that time.
Uh-huh. And then, Ian, what does EVO stand for again?
Exotic Vacuum Object.
Huh. What was that first word again?
Oh, yeah, exotic.
Oh, exotic. Okay.
Exotic vacuum objects.
Huh. Hmm.
The part of the world's expert, two of them, which they're very quiet, Dr. Rauscher and Ken Scholers, would know everything and every angle on the nuclear issues.
Yes, because all this waste, too. I mean, not just the reactor broken and melting down, but all this waste we have sitting around that we have to try to do something with.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got from the Department of Energy in 1995 a book, thick as a telephone book, of every state with all the different deposits of radioactive waste. Yeah, we were going in to try and do something about it, but my partner at the time, civil engineer Richard Burr, had to return to England. So, and then I drifted on to other things. I never forget that. They called the Beamer Report. Pretty shocking stuff.
Wow. I guess in the United States there's the Yucca Mountain, or there's some mountain we have stockpiling this waste.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it just...
Yeah, they're trying to put it in there, but... There are processes to limit it as well, I'm told. There's the Monte America process, which on an industrial scale can eliminate the nuclear waste. But again, I don't know all the politics involved in that, but...
Mm. Yeah, that seems to be a lot of the problems, is the political log jams and roadblocks.
Oh, so much of them, even in this case with the Gulf oil crisis stuff that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, right away, all that awful Corexit stuff that they sprayed on it, I mean, if they would have just left it alone, it probably would have been easier to deal with, I guess. I don't know. I mean, so now there's probably, isn't there supposed to be a lot of this still deep below the surface? I mean, just kind of sitting.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting.
Yeah, it's sitting down there, and some of it comes up again. But it's, if they just left it alone and brought in all those skimmers and skimmed it all up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, wasn't it a Japanese industrialist or something? He had a converted, I guess, supertanker. He converted it to skim it up, but I guess he didn't need that because the Corexit had it down underneath the surface quite a bit.
Yeah, well, BP would have got fined, so they just dumped tons of Corexit on all this stuff. And, wow, it's like really crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I remember seeing the main headquarters of BP in Halliburton down in Venice, Louisiana.
Okay.
Spooky place.
Really? Why?
Oh, yeah.
Why was it spooky?
Well, we were traveling down there and were jumped by cops and all this stuff.
Mm.
And everything's on docks and Halliburton's down there and BP and oil all over the place. Just in the ditches and everywhere.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's a pretty, pretty messy area. So we're chased out of Venice, Louisiana and left overnight in the trailer in a, by the beach. Luckily, NASA kept records and videos of all this stuff.
That was one thing that came out right away. The reporters, nobody could seem to be reporting on this. There were these kind of rent-a-goons from BP would chase everyone away that had a video camera or something. It was...
Oh, yeah. Even Cooper. CNN chased away a few times. But the problem is still down there. I mean, people that are affected have Corexit brain, and we witnessed many people, that, a couple of people at least, you know, passed away from this stuff. And
really?
Jerry Cope of the Huffington Post did some stories on all this. And other media people, but main media has sort of forgotten about it.
Yeah, the media seems to be kind of engineered. They come up with a sensational... it was kind of an interesting coincidence how there was this rather sensational story about how the prison in Afghanistan, there was this amazing tunnel. Somebody tunneled... I don't know how long, it was a huge tunnel, and broke out 500 or so of the Taliban officers or some such thing like that. And then right away we had the, the fake birth certificate came out. And then, of course, the yes, we've killed him once again story about Osama. I don't know.
I mean, there have nations are, you know, they're always fighting amongst themselves. I mean, and I was over there one time in Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of hostile. It was hostile even then.
Really? Yeah, I saw a picture of you. You were in front of the Great Pyramid? What year was that?
Oh, good heavens. That's 1993, 94.
And they had some... pretty hostile then, huh? 93.
Yeah, it was just those countries over there, they're just kind of riled up all the time with each other. I mean,
yeah, I my opinion my opinion is we should just leave them alone, you know, I mean.
Yeah, just leave them alone and let them work out their own details.
Wow.
Eventually, they might find peace, hopefully. But.
Have you ever heard that?
I was going to say, it's the Arab. Arab folks. I mean, I've met some really nice Arab folks in Canada. That were in the Iraq army and who immigrated to Canada. Cool people.
When you were over there at Giza, I've heard these things that are, I don't know how wild or crazy they are, but supposedly there is something under the plain of Giza, there, or they've been finding these archaeological things that are, I don't know exactly what they're supposed to be, but something about how the connected with the pyramids, and it's supposed to be some wild science or something that they don't want to get out, or have you heard any stories about that?
Well, I did. When I was there, I did see that there were a lot of fenced-off areas.
Okay.
And a lot of people doing a lot of work. And the Queen's Chamber was locked up as well. And we only got to go in the King's Chamber.
Okay.
Then from there, we went down to Luxor and then traveled to different locations from there. Valley of the Kings and Queens and all the other incredible places. And some of them were locked up as well. And but one Arab fellow Egyptian said, "Well, come with me. You know, give me some British pound notes." So I took off from the group and went with him and went exploring down this huge cavernous square cave down so deep into the ground that they're getting hot.
Really?
And everything was in colorful hieroglyphics, and came across this gigantic sarcophagus, and it's just sitting there, and you know, and I thought that's rather cool. Then we, I looked around, and we headed up, back up this cave, and then the group said, "Stay with the group, blah, 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 you know, you shouldn't be doing this kind of thing," you know, like, I said, "Oh, good grief, you know, I like my adventures." I'm sure the Egyptian fellow disliked this British pound notes. Remember, one Egyptian fellow said, "Would you like to go ride on the camel? You have it, you go there." I looked and said, "I'm going to get lost in the desert. No, thank you."
I've heard camels can be pretty pretty tricky. They like to spit at you or something like that. I don't know.
Kind of like that, but anyway, I found a lot of very friendly Egyptian folks that I hung out with, because we took off from not the normal tourist routes into these other small towns.
Yeah, I think that generally, for the most part, I mean, people just want to get along, you know, and it's just...
I think so, too, really. They just want to get along, you know. It's just got all these power mongers and dictators running things. Large governments. There's always some dictator somewhere.
Well, I was trying to. I don't know if I asked you any intelligent questions about your work. I was trying to. See, one thing, when I'm recording with this Adobe, I can't. I have to leave that up. I can't go on the web, because if I do that, then it stops the recording. But
That's okay.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's so many facets to your work and your experiments, and then again, too, what makes it worse, I'm a bit of a lateral thinker, which tends to be nonlinear, and so it's easier for me to think of a few things at once, but you can only talk about one thing at once, generally, and so I don't know. But, okay, so he's tried to approach, okay, the fusing of dissimilar substances, but you said that you had as many as 50 different things going on. Like, I'm trying to imagine this. I guess, like, I can see radio waves. Okay, like, I can get my mind around the two cell phones cooking the popcorn. Okay, I can get that, the intersecting radio waves. But then you'll have... You use a static field, you use magnetism, so you're kind of balancing and juggling a lot of different things to get these effects, I guess.
Yeah, and to get it to work 100%, that took a while.
Mm-hmm. Because I guess at first you kind of...
At first it was very random and
mm-hmm.
kind of strange, but since the demand for news people and TV shows became so high...
Exactly.
I just basically calibrated everything and left everything plugged in.
Hmm.
So when TV people would come, I would just put all the plugs in the wall and away it ran on its own. I didn't even bother turning the machines off. So when they came, filmed,
uh-huh.
do the interview, and then I get paid a lot of money, of course, which is fun.
Hmm. Yeah, because you probably have quite an electric bill, don't you? Or do you?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
Not in Canada at the time. It was only, I think, $36 per 2 months.
Oh.
But remember, I'm only running it maybe for 1 day for the TV people.
Yes.
Other things I'd be doing is gunsmithing or machine tool work.
Oh.
So...
Hmm.
That's a lot of hot dating, so, the power bill is low.
That's good.
And other funny things.
Yeah, it would be nice if we could kind of get some of this going to where you could, just to get people off of the so-called grid, so you didn't have to be so subservient to the electric company and the gasoline suppliers and...
Well, that's one of the reasons Kiwanka came down.
Mm-hmm.
Kilcher, actress lady, she wanted to bring to the youth
mm-hmm.
a power supply with these power cells of mine and present them, saying that, look, I don't need batteries anymore. I got John's power cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be main media in Hollywood, so... I'm trying to honor that
mm-hmm.
request. I'm not giving out free. I mean, here you have it. Go for it.
Yeah.
I got many other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hope happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to have patents. I'm not going to be able to become a billionaire and all that nonsense. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
interest me that much.
Mm-hmm.
I can always make money scrap metaling or...
yeah.
Doing physical labor, which I like doing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's one thing, too, is like, how much do you need? It's like, some of these people we know about, they already have literally multiple billions of dollars, and they want more. It's like, huh?
I know. I got friends like that.
It's really something. It's like, my God.
One of the richest guys, fans of mine, I guess you call them,
uh-huh.
supporters, owns his own country.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I've been in contact with him by letters since mm-hmm. 1989.
Okay.
Prince of Liechtenstein, Prince Hans Adam.
Okay.
We have common interests. He's interested in antique guns. He has an entire castle full of them.
Really?
And he's interested in UFOs,
uh-huh.
alternative energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we correspond by letters, but
mm-hmm.
he never funded the project.
Uh-huh.
Only under certain conditions, but I didn't like those conditions. So.
Oh. Well, the UFO... Now, one thing about the poltergeist, you reminded me of the poltergeist phenomenon. I think a lot of times it could be that it may not necessarily be a discarnate spirit, which I think that's probably possible, but it could be some other type of phenomena that's going on that's producing some type of a poltergeisty effect to where... But then, of course, imagine...
Like a kinetic.
Yeah.
No, I doubt that very much. It's just, that came out, by McDonnell Douglas Aerospace.
Okay.
On Fox TV.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, it was called, Strange Universe TV Series.
Hmm.
Where another guest was filming my experiments, came out, was saying it's psychokinetics. And then Albert Budden said the same thing, but it's not true.
Okay.
I think it was psychokinetics.
But
the media, TV people, excuse me, TV people come up with all different angles and that, so.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of hit and misses with what information goes out there.
Uh-huh.
Some of you might watch Strange Universe and, oh, yeah, it's John's mind doing it. Or then to watch another TV show and it's, oh, no, it's, you know, it gets all confusing.
So, so you certainly don't claim to have any wonderful psychokinetic powers.
No.
I mean, there...
It'd be cool if I did,
yeah,
but no, I don't.
I mean, I guess there's... Maybe that's within the realm of some kind of possibility. You'd have to know how to harness it or make it work. I don't know.
Don't fall into the psychotronics program. Warfare program, but I'm...
Yeah, isn't that unfortunate how a lot of this, they have this wonderful technology and their first inclination is to make it a weapon, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, can't we make something less destructive? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean.
As to be funded by the U.S. Pentagon in 2006, Timmy Ventura of American Anti-Gravity presented my work to them, and they showed it to 400 people in the U.S. Pentagon.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted me to work for them, and in Tim Ventura's letter to me mentions that even Donald Rumsfeld was interested in all this stuff.
Really?
But I respectfully declined.
Mm-hmm.
And that, well, you know, the TV shows pay $1,000 up to $10,000 in a day, and it's more fun doing this, plus I have my freedom.
Yes.
Whether they would use it for weaponry, most likely, I think they have to.
Mm.
Matter of national security issues.
National security. I really think they need to go back to calling themselves the War Department, because
War Department.
Yeah, defense. They're not defend. It's like now the world needs defense from them. I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, in all honesty, that the speech that Reverend Martin Luther King made. About how the, what was it, the one line so memorable is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world is my own government, and it still seems to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, maybe they're just getting too rambunctious, and that's not a good thing.
Hmm.
You develop a lot of enemies up.
Yes.
I mean, look at the war on terror, which is pretty sad. I mean, everything's a terrorist. And if you leave empty cardboard box somewhere, people panic and, you know, they call in the SWAT team.
Mm-hmm.
Nutsville land.
Mm-hmm. Well, that whole...
I have another friend, Dennis Kucinich, who really says, wake up, America.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like the Patriot Act bill.
No. The Pat Riot Act. Yes, they've sort of made the our constitutional protections illegal. The concept is just absurd. War on terror. Terror is a tactic, in a sense. Terrorism would be a tactic. You don't have war on a tactic. And then you just saw these things where, of course, Al-Qaeda... Sorry, but it just really doesn't exist. Gone over that quite a bit. But here, these news media, they just keep pumping it all out like it's real. And it would be nice to know the exact percentage of people that actually buy their stuff. I mean, I think at some point they're just going to be completely. Actually, though, I think how they could really fool us is start telling the truth.
That'd be really, I mean, look at the what it takes to go on an airline now.
Well, yeah, I haven't tried that in some years.
I mean,
it's ridiculous.
It's crazy, and is super paranoia. And all the, in the old days, I'm sure the pilots had firearms on board. That's what I'm told.
Mm.
And 6 months prior to 9/11, they were required not to carry firearms, which is strange.
Mm.
All you need is a firearm, the pilot having a firearm, and you just end the problem.
Mm. Well, actually, that reminded me, there was years ago, there was a movie, I believe it was called Con Air. And the idea was that it's a plane full of convicts, and somehow they break loose, and they go up, and they take over the plane. But at the time, I knew someone whose father was a worked for a pilot for some big airline, and the pilots thought that that was such a big joke, because the pilot has the aircraft in his hand, and if somebody comes to the cockpit door that he really doesn't like, he can move that yoke to the firewall, and then Knucklehead is plastered on the ceiling. So,
right.
So it's just, but that's a little bit too much common sense to, anyway.
I mean, that door should be always secure, and with a port, too.
Mm-hmm.
They can put a low-velocity firearm through there or something and ward off some person that's gone nuts and wants to take over an aircraft and do whatever with it, you know?
Mm.
But again, I mean, also, you have somebody that can put explosives in their shoes. And that started a whole new trend.
I think that's... Yeah, I don't really think that was much validity to that. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if a real crazy person wanted to blow up an aircraft, well, they can insert in themselves somehow a C4 explosive.
Oh, my.
So now we're going to all have to get X-rayed.
MRIs for everyone.
MRI for everybody, X-rays. By the time you get to the aircraft, you're half dead from radiation poisoning and just crawling on.
I think a lot of people are just driving now, driving in their car. Actually, I heard somebody say that one time. They said by the time, I forget exactly where it was, but it was like by the time they had to go through all the different stuff and, of course, like changing airplanes and all that business, they could just drive. And it would be just, if not quicker, just better anyway. You don't have to subject yourself to all that hysteria.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, prior to 9/11, you just walk through, you go through customs, look at your passport, and I'll let you through, and you're on your way. And now you have to do a lot of stuff to just get on an aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
Full body scans.
Hmm. Well, yeah, the radiation concerns with that are very real. And then, of course, privacy issues as well.
I love flying, but it's like climbing a mountain to get there.
Yeah. Well,
what's scary is they might have checkpoints through all the United States now.
That's what I've heard that they might try to do, like start working on trains, and then now I don't quite see how they could do it on the highway, because it would completely just bottleneck all the traffic. I mean,
actually, they do have one of those. They have one on Interstate 5, which, it's just to check if illegal aliens like Mexicans. Now, that's prior 9/11.
Okay.
So traffic moves pretty fast, but now they have spots along the Interstate 10, I think, where you show your passport. They ask you if you're an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you live and all this stuff.
Okay. Now, what state?
That's kind of new. I guess that's because of the Mexican-U.S. war thing down there along the border. But
Well, yeah, a simple...
But they might jump past that and have the checkpoints like to do in Egypt.
Okay.
Seeing if you're a terrorist or a good American citizen.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Well, I think...
I don't know how far this paranoia will go.
Well, a really obvious...
It is like a mental illness.
Yes. No question. I think a very obvious and simple way to solve all this drug business is to just end the prohibition. I mean,
yeah,
it's obvious. Prohibition creates a criminal class. And honestly, you know, you could have free heroin samples, and I wouldn't be interested in taking them. So it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to be taking responsibility for our own actions.
Exactly. That's what everybody should be, responsible for their own actions.
It's really not rocket science.
And whatever they own, they should be responsible for it or pay consequences, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you're owning, you know, Second Amendment, if you're owning firearms, you don't just shoot them off in the backyard. You just have them and be responsible for them. It's just like driving. You're responsible for driving. You just don't go through red lights and
exactly
drive along off the road somewhere.
No.
And it's applicable to everything. Vitamins, ham radio, machinery, or whatever. Just be responsible.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I guess the news media should start being responsible in giving us some information that's actually reality-based. That might be good.
I think it would be extremely good.
Hmm. But, well, I don't know. Is there any particular part of your work that you enjoy the most, or any, like all these different wonderful effects? I mean, anything that you liked the most or better than others, or anything that do you like the least? Or did you ever scare yourself?
Did I ever scare myself?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a few times. Yeah, touching something I shouldn't touch and felt the electricity starting to climb towards me. That's scary stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm very cautious when I'm with any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same in my machine tool work, too. I'm very cautious.
Hmm.
You know, I'm taking responsibility. I don't need somebody standing over me.
Yeah.
You know, I got to know your stuff, what you're doing.
Uh-huh. And that's kind of interesting work. You have to be very precise and very exacting tolerances and things to whatever you're making as far as that goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's all good. It's all fun.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the passions is seeing the stuff broadcast and inspiring kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because you might...
doing a TV series was, for Fox TV, was going to be like that. You know, like the... all the long-forgotten technologies.
Mm-hmm.
The vacuum tube technology, lathe machinery, cool stuff that's all kind of new now to a young generation.
Mm-hmm.
They'd only know microchips and CNC machinery.
Hmm.
I'm a history buff. What can I say? You know, just, I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be neat to inspire the next big inventor. So what areas of research would you like to move into? Is there anything like that? Or
I like alternative health. I like radio astronomy. Strange stuff going on the Earth.
Have you ever looked into the so-called UFO phenomenon? You think it's mostly just exotic military?
Oh, No. My ex, but still best friend, she made a mini TV series on UFOs, so she put me to work getting all the UFO information.
Mm-hmm.
From the CIA people, and CIA people at the time were quite helpful.
Oh, really?
And supplying me with a lot of stuff. And so I keep my eyes open for any info on UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll check YouTube and see if anybody's uploaded a video on a UFO.
Uh-huh. I had, I never...
Now, sorry?
Oh, well, no, go ahead. I'm going to finish yourself.
like YouTube is so popular that people have cell phones and they can take pictures of things and
instantly, like
instant stuff. So I'll check it out for any uploaded UFO bad footage. Somebody's taken and that kind of thing. I'll download the video and upload it on my channel just in case it's removed, kind of thing. So I got a huge collection of UFOs, dead aliens, and live aliens collection. And then I have my friends in Black Ops sending me pictures of dead aliens and crazy stuff too. So yeah. So I'll upload that too onto YouTube. As long as I don't mention their name, it's cool.
Yeah. I just had a thing one time. I saw something when I was like 10, and I thought, well, let me just describe it and see what happens. So I did a search on it, and the exact same thing, the exact same story, and all this information about what I'd seen popped up, and then it was some kind of UFO research something. And then I was on this email list, and I was getting 4 and 5 of these things a day of all these different accounts all over the country. And eventually I had to just stop it because I was just, there's just so many of these sightings just every day. I'm like, I just, whatever.
Wow. Are you like, are you a YouTube fan, or you have your own channel kind of thing?
No, not really. I do try to, you know, there's certainly some interesting things on the YouTube, but
I was just recently interviewed by Dutch Synths.
Really?
YouTube channel on the Heart Project, and
he
covers the weather and stuff daily. He's uploading stuff every day, and the background radiation levels. He's got a huge following. I think it's like over 1 million subscribers or something like that.
Really?
One of his videos averages about 15,000 hits once it's put up.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's, if anybody's interested, it's Dutch. D-U-T-C-H-S-I-N-S-E.
Uh-huh.
He's got a lot of coverage, and regular media is covering him as well. He had NBC down there covering him. A few days ago.
I think you said something about Harp. Have you ever heard of somebody named Vetterman? Does that ring a bell?
Which one's that?
Vetterman, maybe? Vetterman? It was just some little note I took. Supposedly, he was saying something about the dangers that Harp... Okay, this is what he said. He said, the Harp reverses ionosphere ions. It can cause havoc strongly... Okay, it could punch holes in the ionosphere to the Van Allen belts and have some type of Ben Franklin effect where charged particles can ride down, stalling the Earth's geomagnetic field.
That's right. It was an article written in R&D Innovator by Dr. Junerman. I have a copy of that somewhere around, but he was very concerned about that aspect of HARP.
Because this one little video I watched, this gentleman, he was saying they were finding... it was looking for oil and for gas, and it was with very low amounts of energy. And here, this harp is using so much. I guess his example, he was using a piano cord, or to say this vibration is, it does so much, but if it was amplified, say, 1 billion times, it could possibly shake the house apart. And he was concerned that this harp could be doing some rather nasty things, but, you know, I don't know.
Probable. There's been a lot of talk about that, and, I mean, you start vibrating something, you can do a lot of damage. So, like what Tesla was doing with vibrating things, and what HARP is doing, if you start resonating something, could do a heck of a lot of damage.
Have you ever heard of the hollow worlds, or the inner earth, the theory of hollow worlds? Or there was a book, Jan Lamprecht has a book. I really need to get it. It's there was an old interview I've actually played on my program once or twice. It was with Art Bell some years ago. and it was about, and it, mm-hmm. the theory works seismologically quite well. The idea is that instead of in at the core, there is a like a central sun, and then there is a vacant area, which is a world, and there's, you know, oceans and continents and all types of things, and then there's the inner Earth and the outer Earth. And one idea was that mm-hmm. you could even, there'd be an opening, say the opening in the ocean, maybe say about 90 miles, and you could actually sail from the inner ocean, outer ocean, or either way, outer ocean to the inner ocean, and the centrifugal force would be that while it was happening, you wouldn't certainly have the sensation of, say, going over a waterfall, but the sun, you know, you'd gradually go in, and also the idea was that in the inner Earth, there's still all these exotic, like, woolly mammoths and things like that. Like, they're talking about cloning a woolly mammoth, and the idea is that the one they found is not that it's tens of millions of years old, it's just it wandered out, could be relatively recently, and got fresh frozen. But that's a whole huge subject. And but seismologically, though, his theory worked quite well. I don't know, the theory of hollow worlds. I don't know.
Sounds pretty cool. I did follow up on a little bit on the hollow Earth.
Mm-hmm. And then we also applied.
I kind of left it at that. I
haven't. Yeah. Jan Lamprecht was the author of the book.
Didn't they do a motion picture on that?
Well, there was a. I think there was an old. There have been a few movies with that with that idea in mind. I think the one most recently was what did they call that? It was I can't think of his name. It was
Jules Verne.
Yes, there was Jules Verne's story. I think Disney did a movie like that in the 50s. And then there was a mm-hmm. movie lately, not too long ago, with, I can't think of his name. He did all the Mummy movies. I can't think of his name. But there was a movie about that, kind of along those lines. It's a pretty interesting
mm-hmm.
little theory. It could well be true. I guess Jan's idea was, if this was true, then of course all the superpowers would be aware of this, but then the thing would be they would want to keep that hidden, because then it would be like, well, we're not really the superpower on the planet. And then also the flying, the UFO types of things, a lot of those could simply be coming from the inner Earth. So,
possible, I don't know. I mean,
hollowplanets.com. Yeah, exactly. Hollowplanets.com. He was going to take that. He was going to redo that site, but I really need to get that book. And I did have some mm-hmm. contact with him once. He was, of course, he's from. I think he was originally from Zimbabwe, or he was doing a lot of work because all of the political unrest. He was focusing on that, but I don't know. But yeah, there's lots of wild little subjects out there that are.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I like to look at.
A lot of cool stuff going on.
Well, I don't
know. So, how you been doing? I mean, you're doing the radio shows and...
Yeah, I've been trying to, when I started this, it was kind of with more heavy-duty political subjects, and then, of course, that kind of, at some point, it gets a little, if not maybe tedious, but it just... It gets too, it's just too negative, and I really, in a sense, more like looking at, like, the hollow world type of thing, or maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know, I kind of like to look into things that are a bit, like the sacred geometry was a pretty interesting subject. I did that some years ago with, I think it was vesica.org, his name was Dr. Robert Gilbert, and the sacred geometry mm-hmm. was pretty interesting. There's the sacred mean. I don't really remember much of it, but like the vesica was the intersection of two circles. It's sort of like almost like an oval type of shape. And then I remember something about that was sort of like it's like there's the five shapes. There are the five platonic solids, was it? That everything material is composed in one way or another of these shapes. And then somebody at one point proved that the entire periodic table can be described that way. And I've really forgotten. I've forgotten all that stuff, but it was pretty neat. Sacred geometry. And then there was bio.
Isn't that Walter Ruscha?
I think there's been a few people involved in that. There was one neat thing that was biogeometry, where there was an Ibrahim Karim, I think, Cairo University, but they did this big study on I guess it was hepatitis, I think, and he didn't want to meet any of the subjects, but he, based on their maladies, he figured that he made a medallion, and this medallion, energy into shape creates function, but somehow his group that just wore the medallion, that's all they did was wear the medallion, they had the greatest cure rate, they had the greatest success of recovery, and the idea was somehow you realign the energy in the body, that a medallion, you know, could do this. And the people that were doing all of the pharmaceuticals and all that stuff, they had a much less success rate or something like that. So,
pharmaceuticals, a whole other topic.
Oh, it isn't that nasty business. I mean, the way I look at it is that health is a natural state. It's your natural state. And if you take care of yourself, you will stay healthy. But if something gets out of balance, there is a natural, even herb or spice or something that you can do. I mean, you don't have to hurt to heal, really. I think.
I agree with you on that.
I mean,
they come up with some of the ridiculous things, you know, like restless leg syndrome or so and so, and then they have to list all the side effects of these drugs.
Isn't it? Everything is a syndrome or
ironic.
It's so crazy. I mean, I've been complaining about that for so long. They'll have an advertisement, and it's literally about 5 or 10 seconds of why you really need this, and then 2 minutes of how it can kill you. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
That's a good thing. I mean, yeah, it's good to say that. It's pretty, you know, but why start with something like that?
Wow. Like, supposedly there's all these different cancer cures. There's, I like to bring up Tullio Simoncini. You can look up cancer as a fungus and how he cures cancer with baking soda, because he says that what we call cancer is the body's reaction to a fungus. And then I just got something today that there's a gentleman, Canadian, something about hemp oil. Hemp oil was curing forms of cancer. But they're all there's Essiac, and there's all these different things. But they're relatively cheap, and they're natural. And they don't...
Right.
You know, so you really, I think you really don't need a doctor. I mean, it just...
Yeah. I mean, got cancer, you go to the doctor and say, well, chemo or radiation, you know. It doesn't say anything about Essiac or blood root or all the herbs that can eliminate it as well. They used to, physicians used to really do that kind of stuff a long time ago, but they got wrapped up in the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, that's a multi-billion dollar industry going on.
I'm going to try medicating the kids, you know, and that didn't work out too well. Yeah, the Columbine shooting started from some kid on Prozac.
Yeah, I saw some interview where it was this kid. He was like, he said he came to in the police station, and he didn't know quite what happened. The last thing he knew, he was like going to work or going to school, but he was on some kind of awful psychotropic types of things they're giving these kids. And then I guess he brought a gun to school. He didn't really hurt anyone, but it's just, I don't know. And honestly, I think that the whole I've looked into before, the vaccine business, I think that's what autism is. It's really vaccinosis. You know, it's completely unnatural a way, especially in newborns. You pump all these horrible substances right into this infant, and you wonder why it scrambles their brains. I mean...
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Hmm.
You got the vaccines, you got the pharmaceuticals, you got all these horrible things.
But then if you question any of it, then you're nuts. Because it's on TV. We know it's true.
Yeah.
As seen
that's
on
the problem, again, media. Media, you know, mm-hmm. It's on TV, it's media programming.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Question is, was radio in its early phase programming?
Ah.
I don't know, but...
Uh-huh.
I think broadcasters should be responsible in what they transmit.
Yes. I mean, it should be the information. You should really check things out for yourself. I mean, it could be, you know, there's information out there, and here it is. But I mean, you're told you should believe something,
mm-hmm.
and then I'd like to know exactly how many, but people really do buy some of this stuff. But it'd be almost impossible to have an unbiased polling data in a. I don't know. I mean. I really think they may have shot themselves in the foot with this Osama thing, honestly, because I really don't think many people are going to buy that. And then you have some outlets that are maybe supposedly credible, but they're running with the story like it's fact. No one in any kind of so-called mainstream has even remotely questioned this. I mean, come on.
Exactly. And I know a lot of that. You're right. And I do know, personally, a lot of... news reporters, which are actually told what to report.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these news reporters that I know, we even worked for CNN, and they just quit and did their own private video
mm-hmm.
work. Oh, I met so many reporters that tell me the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So they either quit or they're still working. But they tell me, you know, what goes on.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, yes, what is it? I don't know who said it. It said, don't complain about the media, become the media. You know, it's, especially now...
That's what I'm trying to do a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, exactly. Because with the web, you know, instantly, that's the network. You could have... Well, what is it on Skype? Has, what, how many, what, 600 million users or something? Some crazy number?
600 million?
Or some
on Skype?
Some unbelievable number. I'm not sure what it was, but I mean, it's like, and it's not, I mean, if you put out something, it's not that everyone's going to, but I think sometimes, too, the hits can be manipulated, like on the, maybe on the YouTube, like something gets a little too popular, and then it sort of either gets bumped, or maybe the numbers of hits or views are not really accurately recorded, or, you know, I don't know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. That is hard to tell, but still, it's open. I mean, it's not controlled.
Yes. Well, like
you too. You're too, basically. It's just you broadcast yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's turned into quite an interesting section of the net. I'll Google search out something, but I'll use the images as well as YouTube.
Okay.
For video on Google search. Uh-huh. I find more things sometimes by going by video.
Mm-hmm.
Or image.
Well, there was something that I played some time ago. There's a brasscheck.tv.com that I like to reference sometimes, and sometimes I've just come in and I can just, if the computer cooperates, I can play different videos from them on all different types of subjects, and mostly it works on the radio. But some years back, there was something about the Facebook. Now, I've never done the Facebook. I don't tweet or Twitter or whatever. I don't do any of that stuff. But this thing was about how the Facebook was actually one of the companies that started it was a known CIA proprietary company. But now, just recently, how Assange, there was a RT interview with Julian Assange, was saying that all of the intelligence, which is a bad term, but the CIA, the different of these intelligence apparatus have a backdoor to get into a mine, Facebook, for whatever. So it says if you're on Facebook, you are just opening yourself up to, I mean, not just those people, but there have been cases where people have been, say their houses have been robbed because they're, oh, yeah, we're going on our two-week vacation. And then, you know, because one friend is another friend, and, you know, you have these people that don't know you or as your friends, and then you get whatever, types of things like that.
Oh, so. Yeah, yeah. Facebook is very, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to put too much information there. Sometimes I put silly things like talking Tomcat, you know.
Oh, really?
Or like an iPad application or something totally ridiculous or some of my TV shows, links and that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
I rarely put any information, you know.
Yeah.
I just, I'm aware of the situation.
Yeah.
But this information, I'm in somewhere in Antarctica, so.
Yeah, I guess it would be fun to maybe play with it, put something out like there, then just to see what happens. You go fishing where, you know, I don't know. Say you're gonna be away when you're not, and see who shows up or something. I don't know, but I overheard, because I don't really know anybody that's on that too much, but I overheard somebody one time saying that, I think it was their mom, that she was on like Facebook like all day. I was like, how do you do that? You sit all day, and this was supposedly like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours doing this Facebook business. I mean, it just, wow. Go outside, you know, plant a garden or something.
But you know, do some physical, yeah.
That's what
Facebook all day long. I could. I get Facebook notifications and approve friends, and that's basically it. Or send a link in there, and
yeah,
and about maybe all told 15 minutes or less on that. If I'm on the internet, I'll try and answer emails. Take a lot of time to delete them.
Yeah,
and then I'll go to MySpace, approve friends, say hi, and then drop into YouTube and upload a video or two or three. And that's basically it. They spend a lot of time on the net, but I'm finding it becoming a little boring. I like doing things in real life a lot more than.
Yes, I think real life is can be a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Well, I guess we kind of have to wrap it up. Now, I guess, I don't know, I probably should have tried to do a little more research and ask you a little more intelligent questions, but maybe just to try to sum it up, you know, have your website. It's now there is one, it's hutchinsoneffect.ca, is it? I can't get that up because I close Adobe, I lose my recording.
I actually don't use that one. It's a pirate website.
Oh, what is your website then? What is your?
It's one of the social networks. It's MySpace.
Okay.
John K. Hutchison.
Okay.
That's my, what I call my website. And I haven't got time to host a website or use it. And the other one is YouTube, where I try and get as much information.
Okay.
And that's John K. Hutchison 1.
John K. Hutchison 1 on on YouTube. So maybe the best way to get introduced to your work would be to go to the YouTube channel.
I think so. Yeah, YouTube. That's kind of the best way. It's got all the, even some full feature TV shows that's out there.
And then, of course, John K. Hutchison, let me spell it, it's H-U-T-C-H-I-S-O-N, Hutchison.
That's right.
So maybe then briefly, okay, if I was just to ask you, what is, of course, I guess there's lots of effects, but what is the Hutchison effect? What would you say to that?
Well, basically, it was named by scientists in the scientific and military-industrial complex. A long time ago.
Oh, okay. Well, do you have a better name for it, or
do I have a better name for it? No, I guess not. I mean,
okay,
this is what they named it at that time, and it sort of stuck in there. And it's just the accumulation of strange effects that happen with radio transmitting equipment.
I wonder if we could do anything. I wonder if we could do anything legal and interesting with a radio station. I don't know if we could. We don't want to knock people's pictures off the walls or anything, but.
How are you transmitting out of?
Oh, we don't have much. I think we have like 950 watts. That's not too good, is it? I mean.
950 watts?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Really?
FM or AM?
FM, yes.
FM transmitter.
Can we make any...
Well, you could, if you don't get in trouble with the FCC.
Well, we're pretty small, so I don't think anybody's paying much attention anyway, but, you know, whatever. But,
Is you covering the entire university, I guess, or more?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, it does go fairly far. I mean, I guess theoretically we have about 100 or so thousand people in the listening area. It does go, of course, it depends on the lay of the land and whatnot, but it's a fairly, fairly large area. I mean, I think what's interesting is AM radio, like for a little while there, for a couple of years, I would try to follow the different AM, of course, at night. When the sun, I guess it has something to do with the sun. The sun would go down, and then immediately you'd pick up all these. Like here, I would get WHS in Louisville, Kentucky. I would get, I think briefly, even I got one in Louisiana, New York, of course, Boston, Chicago, Charlotte, North Carolina, all these different radio stations. And and it's kind of interesting how you could pick them up at night, but in the daytime, you could only get, say, local stations. But, however, though, I had got this old pickup, and all it has is an AM radio, and it's very powerful. Well, of course, now that it can't be running. If the motor is running, it doesn't get too much. But if it's shut off, it's surprising to me. I guess it has to do with the antenna, because it pulls in these AM stations in the daytime that are pretty far away, like maybe Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I mean, it's not too far, but it's kind of far for AM. So it's kind of interesting to me how the AM versus the FM. You've got amplitude modulation, frequency modulation.
Travel so far. Low band, it's propagation in the sky with the ionosphere. So FM seems to, does have its range, and I don't know at night or daytime, there must be a difference, of course.
I was thinking it had to do with the sun. Somehow the sun cancels something. I don't know.
Yeah, it is with the sun, and the sun and the ionosphere and geomagnetic field activity.
That's an interesting thing, too, because the magnetic fields are constantly moving, say, the magnetic north, because, like, on aviation maps, you know, that's part of the, if you're plotting your course, there's a certain amount you have to add or subtract based on the magnetic north, and that's, like, always moving around.
Yeah, I got a cool iPad application. It's a magnetometer. It's like a compass, and it shows the actual movement of the... it shows the real-time movement of the geomagnetic field.
Wow.
It's really a cool application, and if you're traveling with it in a car or something, if you go over a bridge, the whole thing spins around in different directions. It's kind of really strange stuff. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So...
Huh.
That sounds like you're getting out okay.
Yeah.
100,000 watt FM trans, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, then, of course, now we do webcast. So in that sense, we're worldwide. We're WSHC Worldwide. You see, it's 897WSHC.org. So,
cool.
Yeah. You don't know. Actually, on some of my more, shall we say, politically sensitive things, I've tried to send shows. Well, I have sent shows to people that were like all over the place, and I never got any response. But you know, who knows? You never know who might be listening. Or actually, I don't know. One part about the radio, I think, is, and I'm not saying this necessarily bad. The only reason I'm doing this is because there's information that I seem to come across that I think is interesting, and I just like to put it out there. And I don't even give my name, you know. But it seems like some of the like for a little while I was watching, well, paying attention to the nationwide AM people, and it is just amazing, the ego. And I just at some point I couldn't handle it anymore, because some of them literally say that you should worship them, basically. You know, they have a PhD, and they're just God's gift to everything, and or they'll call themselves the great. And this is, I just couldn't handle the ego. It was too much. And then when they say they're presenting information, they're really not. I mean, it's mostly name calling and shouting somebody down, and the loudest person is right. And you know, I just oh well.
Yeah.
So would there be any little experiments we could maybe come up to produce some little thing, maybe go to Radio Shack and just do something that's sort of a neat effect without endangering ourselves or anything?
I think using a 555 chip and make a little modulator.
Oh, really? 555 chip?
Yeah.
And make a little modulator?
Yeah.
Hmm. And
yeah.
What
would... tone generator.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Simplistic thing that everybody can make.
Yeah. Ham radio is kind of neat. I never really tried. I listened to one for a while. I knew somebody had one, and I would just kind of go through the dial, and it was kind of interesting to listen to what you'd hear on the ham radio. It was kind of kind of weird or something.
Oh, as a kid, I tune into ham radio and listen into all the different... noises, signals, and communications. It's really cool, though.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. The noise, some of the noises that happen. I wonder, you know, all the different, I don't know if it's oscillations or just wild little noises that pop up. I mean, it's kind of wild.
It can be relations, solar storms, meteorites, lightning strikes.
Yeah.
You pick all that stuff up on the radio.
Hmm.
Stress from earthquakes, you can pick that up.
Really?
As well, it's static.
Mm-hmm.
There's machinery that's running where you can pick up the noise from them. The power plant's running and pick up noise from those as well.
Yes. Oh, one.
A lot of stuff. You can pick up the solar flux index. That's the sun acting with the ionosphere, and you hear that all the time.
Really? One thing.
One time, a long time ago, the whole radio band was swamped by what they call a Soviet woodpecker.
I heard something about that.
Yeah. It was very annoying. It was everywhere.
Hmm.
It just suddenly stopped.
Hmm. Wow.
I found some cool YouTube videos on it and uploaded them.
Yeah, that'd be something to look up. Hmm. One of the things that's disturbing is definitely why I don't talk. If I talk on the cell phone, it's on speaker, and it's not for very long. But if you make a cell phone call near a radio, you hear, and it can be even 6 feet away, the interference that cell phone is doing to the radio. And it's like, well, if you have that pressed up against your head for a long time, I mean, your brains are getting baked, basically. I mean, something...
Yeah. Low-level microwave.
Wow. Well, John Hutchison, I thank you for chatting. I don't know if I really... I was going to try to present your work. At least maybe we have some avenues there, your YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one more time, that's...
that would be...
Yeah.
That would probably be the coolest presentation, because
yeah.
It is covered by... main media on special TV shows and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah. And was it J.K. Hutchison 1?
John K. Hutchison 1.
John K. Hutchison 1. And that's on the
mm-hmm.
YouTube. All right, so well, thank you very much for chatting. And maybe at least if anybody is still listening, they can have some avenues too, and they're interested, look into your work. And have a lot of fun looking at your research.
Indeed. It's been a pleasure being on your show today.
All right, sir. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, my friend. Well, you take care.
All right, you too. And maybe sometime I'll have something more coherent and we could chat about something. Maybe if you have more success, say, in the work with the ameliorating the problems in the Gulf, or maybe hopefully something with the Japanese... that horrible situation there with that meltdown. Maybe we could come back and share success with that.
Okay. Sounds like fun.
Okay, great. Well, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
You have a great day.
You too.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.